Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Are you interested in angels, demons, spirits, ghosts, and monsters? Are you curious about their origins, tales, and influence upon history and on the present day? If so, sit back, relax, and welcome to Southern Demonology, the podcast that explores all of this and more.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello all, and welcome back to Southern Demonology. This is episode 9. And if you didn't get a chance to, I hope that you will find the time to check out the special interview that we did with Spirits and More Radio on demons. It was a lot of fun, and typically the host only gives non-Patreon subscribers to his channel the first hour of the show, but because you are a fan of Southern Demonology, then you will get the entire 2-hour episode for free. So anyway, if you get a chance, check that out. I think we covered a lot of different topics, and it was a lot of fun to doing that. So thank you very much for the opportunity. It was a heck of a lot of fun, and I'm hoping to have him on our show relatively soon, because he's a fascinating guy, and I think that it would, you know, it's always good to have different opinions going on. And for those who have actually written messages saying welcome back and glad you're doing it again, thank you very much. I really appreciate the encouragement and support. It still kind of boggles my mind that people like this, and I hope that you continue to do so. So thank you very much. This may be a little bit of a shorter episode tonight, just because it's already after midnight here on the East Coast, and I have work bright and early in the morning. So we'll see how far I can go. However, I didn't want to delay in pumping out a new episode. I typically try to do them on Sundays, just because it's a free day, but we'll see how far we can get. I didn't want to delay this week, especially because while it's fresh in my mind, I went and saw The Nun last night in theaters, and I wanted to provide both a kind of spoiler-free and maybe include a few spoilers afterwards for those who have seen it or have no interest in seeing it. And then use that as a launching point of trying to talk about some more modern demonology and get that into the mix. So, should you go see The Nun? The answer is categorically no. You absolutely should not. Even if you are a huge fan of the Conjuring series, I recommend you stay far, far away, or wait till it gets out of theaters, and then you're not wasting quite so much money when you do happen to rent it digitally or however you prefer to do so. I had some hopes for this movie. I really did enjoy The Conjuring 2. Of course, the character design of Valak, the demon that was introduced there and continued on into the new movie, is phenomenal. Very frightening, very well done in its simplicity. So I thought that, you know, especially if they're going to get more into the Catholic side of the house, perhaps they could do something really interesting with it. And they didn't. This movie was essentially, oh, we have a really great character design. How can we get more money out of that? The movie was completely incoherent on so many different levels. It was boring. There were no scares whatsoever besides one jump scare near the beginning. Everything else was dull. And I was sitting in a Dolby Cinema theater with, you know, sound effects that could shake the entire comforter that you're sitting on. And I wasn't moved at all. And it was an extremely short movie. Normally, I like to stay in the moment. And if a movie jars me out of that, then it lessens my enjoyment a good bit. And I didn't even have time to wonder if when this movie is going to end, because it was done before I ever expected it to. So, on pretty much every single level, it was a huge disappointment, which is a shame. I mean, it could have been something really, really interesting, and instead, it just fell flat. All right, now I want to get into some more of the particulars of the movie. I would still try to keep this as spoiler-free as possible. I won't be revealing the ending or anything like that, but I will be discussing a few of the particulars of the plot. So if you want to be completely ignorant of this until you get a chance to see the movie for yourselves, then skip to after the 25-second music interlude that I'll be putting in a little bit later. But otherwise, you know, stick around. I hope you enjoy this. So, the movie is really centered around, you know, two main characters. A sister who hasn't really taken her her vows yet. And then a father who is a miracle hunter, as he puts it in the movie. And they are sent to a Romanian abbey to see if the church there is still holy or not, because they are sent to investigate why and how a nun committed suicide, which is, you know, one of the gravest of all mortal sins that one could commit. Now, anyone who has ever seen one of the previews to this movie will know that this abbey is cursed by Valak, a demonic presence. But the reasoning for all of the movie is just, it violates, I think, one of the central tenets to the Conjuring series. The Conjuring series is supposed to be based upon their real life, quote-unquote, experiences of Ed and Lorraine Warren. I'm not going to go into now whether I, you know, think they're legit or not. I honestly haven't done enough research to even begin to form a hypothesis about that. But anyway, you know, the first and second Conjuring movies were really based upon some of the experiences that the couple had purportedly gone through. And those movies are effective because they keep things within the realm of the plausible. You know, whether you believe in demons or not, the way everything is presented, it seems kind of reasonable. Everything flows together. They don't make any gigantic, bold, metaphysical claims that would, you know, instantly knock it out of contention as something that would fall within the realms of reality or not. This is not true for this movie at all. Come to find out that this abbey was really originally a portal to hell that was opened up by the magical wrongdoings of a nobleman And then the church came in and was able to seal up this portal by using a relic that contained the blood of Jesus Christ. Already, we have gone so far out of the plausible that it's not even remotely funny. And then, everything was fine until bombs hit the Abbey, and this just happened to break free the one portal to hell that was there, and Valak is free to roam the halls and commit all of the evilness that he absolutely wants to. So that in and of by itself is just horrible storytelling. I mean, they could have come up with 1,001 other ways to explain all of this stuff. I mean, Valak as a character is really interesting. And they at least do have it right that he is supposed to have dominion over snakes. That's what's reported in all of the Gurtic demonology grimoires that you'll find written between, say, 1200 and 1700. But as so much for the defiling part, I think that's kind of thrown in there for not too many good reasons. But regardless, so that was kind of the first cardinal sin that this movie created. There's quite a few other nitpicks, but I think the biggest one, and this is a spoiler, so turn away for the next 30 seconds if you absolutely don't want to hear it, is one of the characters is forcefully possessed by a
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And that was the part that was just completely idiotic. Demonic possession. And this is where we're going to turn away from the movie itself and move more into using it as a jumping off point to talk about how demonic possession may work. Demonic possession is not something that can be forced upon an individual. A person has free will. And free will is something that cannot be denied. It cannot be overridden. Free will is absolute, at least within the eyes of Christianity and a lot of other religions. So to assume that a person's free will can just be overwritten instantly by having something jammed down a character's throat is complete hogwash. The way, at least within a lot of documented cases that I have read, demonic possession is always about a slow seduction. It's something that happens very gradually, very insidiously. A demonic entity approaches an individual in some way, shape, or fashion, slowly begins to embed itself within that person's life. And there's always a moment. A moment where an offer is made and it is then accepted by that person, the possessed. Until then, that entity is only exerting influence upon a person's life, but it's not controlling. However, once that offer has been made and it's then accepted, that is when possession becomes paramount. That's when it is a de facto standard in that person's life. Their free will has now been subjugated because they allowed it to be subjugated. That is how demons work. They are preternatural entities that seep into a soul and then take it over. But they do so by that person's own acknowledgement. They give permission for that to happen. And it's only by outside influences can that possession be taken away. That's what's so deadly about these things. You know, there's no gross manifestations of power. Even those that are in the room, I mean, you could always explain things away. Like, for example, someone is possessed. One of the categorical rules that is usually placed forth for exorcists is you want to make sure that the possessed is restrained, that they are kept in a bare room, and that you have assistance, if possible, that can aid the priest in case the possessed becomes free or they need extra restraining. And the reason why is that it's not unknown for during an exorcism for things to go flying about a room. It's not unknown for a room to grow deathly chill. And it's not unknown that a person may exhibit really strange behaviors. They may be able to speak languages that the individual never knew. Or they might be able to pry forth specific details of people in the room and try to dirty that individual with knowledge being shared publicly that would shame that individual. But yet, all of these things still fit within the realm of the plausible. Someone who is a skeptic could come forth and say, oh, well, that happened because of this or that. Or, you know, there's nothing that's so grossly manifested that the only possible explanation is, oh, there really must be a demon in here. And that is the key. I mean, we all know the phrase that, you know, the greatest trick that the devil ever accomplished or pulled was having people believe that he doesn't exist. And that's still true for all demonic entities. You know, it's a matter, I still think that, you know, no matter how much proof you try to get in the world, everything is still a matter of faith. And that is what makes everything so insidious about demonic possession. Because, you know, people could explain it away. There's nothing there that is just absolutely going to bash people over the head. The other thing I wanted to go over was there's often a common misconception about exorcisms. And you see this in movies all the time, where a priest or a couple of priests would go in, and then an hour or two later, everything's done. It's all wrapped up nice and pretty. And exorcisms in real life do not work like that. Exorcisms are an extremely lengthy affair, sometimes spanning multiple weeks or months. It's, in fact, the case of the exorcist, the real story in which it's based upon, that took several months. And the really interesting part of that is that it wasn't actually an exorcist that succeeded in that case at all. Most exorcisms, the demons involved in them are not, quote unquote, the devil. In fact, it's usually another demon, and that's one of the main goals of the beginning part of the exorcism, is to get a name for the demon. It may not be its true name, but it's something that can be identified by, and then that can be used to hold some modicum of power over it. But in the case of the original exorcist story, the entity that was possessing the boy was supposedly the devil. And the boy was only cured of the possession after a vision of Saint Michael appeared in the abbey, the chapel there. And that was the only thing that allowed this tenacious entity to be released. And that makes total sense, because if you're dealing with the ultimate evil, then only something that is equally as powerful, which in this case is Michael, whose Hebrew name is Mikael, who is like God, would actually able to free a person from that influence. So, yeah, that is pretty much it for this episode. I really just wanted to give a warning about this movie, so that if you happen to go see it, then, you know, you do so knowing that you're probably going to walk away disappointed. Now, I went with my wife. She actually enjoyed it. She wasn't scared at all, but she didn't think too much about it. But she said that she did like it. So if you're a layperson and you just like scary stuff, then maybe you will enjoy it. I'm not saying you should listen to my, you know, crackpot very specific things, but there is so much wrong with the movie that it at no point was I lost in the story. At no point did I actually enjoy what I was watching. A few of the visuals were very interesting, especially in the very beginning. But beyond that, there's really nothing that I could, you know, that I could recommend it for. And that's a shame, because I love the subject matter. I actually like the series of the movies. I will say that it was neat how they tied it into the rest of the Conjuring series. That was the only kind of point of interest that I can check off. But everything else was a wash, pretty much. So forgive the short episode. We're only going to be about 22 minutes here. But I hope you enjoyed it. If there's any kind of topics or items that you want covered, if you like this, if you didn't like this, if you would leave a nice comment on Facebook or on our website, southerndemonology.com, I would greatly appreciate it. If you just want to reach out and say hi, more than welcome to do that too. I love getting letters from listeners and just having, you know, random conversations, whether they're, you know, very specific questions or just items in general. So anyway, I hope everyone has a great week. We will have a new episode that will come out next weekend. And yeah, stay safe out there. Thank you very much. This has been Southern Demonology. Please feel free to contact us at southerndemonology@gmail.com. We hope that you join us again for our next episode.